author of the week on Radio Gorgeous.
Herta Feely, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've flown across the pond to talk to me, and I know it was specifically to talk to me.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
Absolutely.
about your book, Saving Phoebe Murrow.
Yes.
Tell me about the themes in the book.
Okay. Well, the central theme is a girl gets cyberbullied. So social media. We're talking about how social media impacts teens, but not only teens, adults as well. It's very much about mother-daughter relationships and really about a whole bunch of different relationships, women and women, girls, cliquish women, mean girls, also, I guess, husbands and wives. So it's about all of those kinds of things. And I think one of the maybe lesser things that is a theme would be betrayal, because there are betrayals of all kinds in this book. There's yes. also, you know, women juggling career and family, a woman who really is very protective but overly rigid as a mother, and then another mother who is very laissez-faire and perhaps overly permissive. So there are lots of different things in this.
Yes, and it, as you say, it is lousy with betrayal.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the story, we meet Phoebe Murrow. Phoebe Murrow, one of the other things it does include as well as cyberbullying is self-harming.
Yes, cutting.
She cuts herself. And I know somebody whose daughter cuts herself. And the received wisdom used to be that, oh, it was just expressing yourself and doesn't lead to anything. And it's like, really? So, yes, it does.
It can definitely lead to something. One of the things that's interesting about cutting is I spoke to a researcher at Cornell University, and she said that cutting is the new anorexia. Mm-hmm. And bulimia. It really replaced that when apparently Angelina Jolie came out with information that she was a cutter, and suddenly everybody is cutting. However, it is a way to relieve emotional pain, and that is what Phoebe has.
Mm-hmm. And the emotional pain comes from being a teenage girl.
Being vulnerable, being sensitive, being picked on. Mm-hmm. Being, you know, not part of the group, being made fun of. And that's what Phoebe's background is. And it was one day, by accident, she was so humiliated that she resorted to harming herself. She pulled out a paperclip, of all things, and started to stab herself. And, you know, I don't even know where that really came from. It's certainly not something that I have experience with. But it felt very real to me. And I have to say, I was really pleased when several people who were experienced with this sort of thing read the passages and they said, you've got it. So it is a sad part of the story, but it's a very real part. And it is another piece of what's happening to girls and boys in this country.
Yeah.
And in both countries,
in all, in the world,
in the world,
in
the world,
village.
Yes, in our global village.
And yeah, that I also found it to be true because she does have a therapist. She has a very loving family. She has a therapist who works with her on this, and still she slips, and still we don't know how to talk to our teenagers, and still we find these things difficult. And there's this sort of feeling throughout this book of like. Life is scary, and for this mother in particular, how do I save this girl?
Yes.
How do I
get
in?
On top of things?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that that's an age-old question. You know, children are moving away from us, and there are things that we do. And, you know, people have taken Isabel, her mother, to task because she is overly rigid, I think. I think she's overly harsh. But it's a little bit of her own background coming to bear on her life. And it's a little bit of a repeat. So, you know, if we were abused, then maybe we're going to be abusive. And it's not until you really fully realize that, that you can do something about it. And, you know, does Isabel get a second chance? Well, we'll find out.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because to me that was one of the strongest themes in the book, in the background of the story, is that each of the experiences these mothers had as children that they wanted to bend over backwards not to do,
yes,
was exactly what they both end up repeating.
Yes, I think that it is a little bit of a sub theme. The teenagers talk about it too. Are you going to be like your parents, right?
And we all say we're never going
right,
to be.
Right, right.
And we all pick out the thing that we are not going to do. And yet, while the actions are different, seen from distance, it has the same effect.
It's really, and the one girl who says, well, she would be happy to be exactly like her mother. When she discovers certain things about her mother, you know, she kind of has to reassess.
Yes. Yeah. So, right. Exactly. Right. Could have a rethink on that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
I don't know if you were planning to get into this, but let me jump into it. The reason that I wrote this book. One day in January of 2008, I was reading an article in the style section of the Washington Post. And I wish listeners could see this photograph that was attached to the article. But it's a father sitting clearly in a girl's bedroom. And it was a girl, Megan Meyer, who was cyberbullied and killed herself as a result of the cyberbullying that was led by a boy named Josh Evans, who was a few years older than her. She was 13. That boy was 16. And it turned out that boy was actually a 47-year-old woman named Lori Drew, who knew Megan, who lived three doors away, who was the mother of one of Megan's best friends. And I just was flabbergasted. And the picture, the photograph, is of this father looking so forlorn in his daughter's bedroom, his daughter who no longer is. And the caption said something like, if Megan had done this with a gun in my house, I would be in jail. But because this woman did it from behind her computer, the safety of her home, she goes free, and nothing has been done to her. Mm-hmm. The whole story, I mean, still gives me chills that happened, that this still happens. There was a girl in Virginia this past year who met a boy on Facebook. He actually was a boy. He talked her into sneaking out of her home. It was in January. She never came home. She was found murdered 3 days later. He was a Virginia Tech student, 18 years old. He lured her out of the house and killed her. And, I mean, he's in prison on murder charges, and he had an accomplice, and she told them what happened. I mean, you have to be so careful this is social media. This is a whole new world where, you know, stranger danger was the big thing when my children were young. Now you've got a whole new layer of stranger danger. And while that may not be, I don't want people to become afraid, overly afraid. That's probably the rare thing. Still, it happens a fair amount that people pose as other people, that you've got young girls who just want to be loved. They're flirting online, and they don't even know who they're flirting with. There are sexual predators that are using the internet. It's something that parents so need to get on top of right at the outset. And I think one of the problems is that parents didn't grow up with social media, so they don't even know what social media their kids are on. They, you know, it's we're all playing catch up. So anyway, so Phoebe was, you know, the while that was the inspiration was Megan Meyer. That isn't my story. Mm-hmm. It's a different story with different set of characters, different situation, but some similarities.
Mm-hmm. And what are the similarities? Because as you just said, there was a... Do you remember the story in Texas and the cheerleaders and
yes.
the moms? And she, you know, so she went and physically harmed
yes.
the other daughter, which in itself is just
insane.
So insane. Like you're living through your child and you're like, wow. But she did go to jail because she physically, you know, went and did it. And it's like this, and legislation, parents, all of us are really late to catching up.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. I was just standing on the Tube platform, a woman had her wallet out, and I was like, who would bother even stealing that now? Just go online and get traded. Like, who cares? Yeah, wave it around. Nobody needs your 20 quid. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure people do, but, you know, in the general scheme
right,
of things,
right.
you know, the biggest
yes.
threats. And there's, you know, our governments, are none of the legislators can help us really.
Now, you know what,
to do
though?
Anything.
Apparently, I ran across this the other day in the UK and in some of the other European countries. They have passed laws prohibiting cyber exploitation.
Yes.
Which, so that's really good. And that's having a really good, I mean, you know, it has an effect. If you know that you're going to go to jail because you're taking someone else's nude photograph and you're sharing it with everybody without that person's consent,
yes.
that should be against the law, and it is against the law. And in the U.S., they have passed some legislation in California, but not the rest of the country. So that's one little piece of it, but regulations need to happen. So I don't know if your listeners are interested, but I would really encourage people to A, educate yourselves about social media. And where do you go to do that? You go on the internet.
Both the kill or cure here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the problem, you know, as well as, you know, but also the solution.
Radio Gorgeous.
It is so scary as a parent, and I know you're through the other side, but what kinds of things did you talk to your sons about?
Well, I have to say, I don't think I did a very good job, but what I would say, I mean, I was pretty aware of what pretty much what they were doing, and they were, like I say, they were at the early end of it, and I said to them, you must respect, you know, your friends, but girls, you know, I don't want to hear ever that you have done something that's disrespectful. And believe me, I will find out because I am your mother and mothers know everything. Mm-hmm. And somehow there were
enough. Reinforce that mystique.
Yes.
I was gonna say, my son thinks that, you know, I always happen to be walking by the door when he comes home. He's like, oh my God, you're like a wish. I'm like, yes, I'm keeping that alive.
That's
I am
right.
a witch.
Exactly.
I will find out.
Exactly. And somehow, magically, I always did find out. And so
there is, maybe we are witches.
Yes, yes.
Contact just, your inner witch.
That's and, right. We will own that. I
exactly.
totally own my witchiness. So, you know, and that, it goes for adults. I mean, think about the things that adults do to each other. So how can we tell our kids to do X, Y, and Z if we're not being good role models? And right now, there's a kind of very big thing going on in the United States in the form of an election with, you know, a lot of tweeting happening and really bullying.
Yeah.
Bullying behavior
yeah.
online.
Yeah. And just like the cutting, and just like it's becoming normal.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the more it's done, the more normal and accepted it becomes.
Right. And there was a very devastatingly sad story here in the UK. A woman, well, the boy's name is Felix Alexander, and the mother was Lucy. Mm-hmm. And he was bullied and bullied and bullied, cyber bullied, all kinds of bullied. And finally, he couldn't take it anymore, and he killed himself. He went in front of a train. And she wrote this beautiful letter, and she said, don't let that be the new normal. She said, people say, oh, it's just online banter. And she said, if it's not kind, if it's, you know, ask yourself, would you want someone to say these things to you? It was the most heartfelt letter. And again, you can find it online, Lucy Alexander. I mean, to me, she wrote the perfect letter that could be a template for what we should all do and talk to our children about to teach them. You know, these are the kinds of posts that you post, not this. And if somebody does start to bully, get away from the social media. Turn it off. Move away. Also, stand up for your friends. Don't let them be bullied. Certainly don't pile on. You know, there are so many things. I think that they're kind of common sense. It's like how we tell our children to behave in other situations. It's the same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and the problem with bullying, social media bullying, and I've gotten this in reviews. People said, oh my gosh, your book took me back to when I was in high school and I was getting bullied. And thank God there was no social media. So social media makes it so much worse because it's 24/7.
And it also, it in a way, it makes it sort of permanent.
Yes, exactly. Permanent.
In a way,
yes. And so it exposes you to so many people. Yeah. And no wonder someone commits suicide.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, I mean, and I hope that everybody is sensitive and vulnerable because that's how we should be. Right?
We don't. Yes, we shouldn't stamp that out.
Right.
You know,
right.
We should be inured to each other and to lovely human interaction. But yeah, it's.
And the sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt you. No, that's not true. They do hurt.
They do hurt. That being said,
yes,
it was a very suspenseful read.
Oh, good.
And very, you know what I mean? And it's and really the focus was on those parts of the story. Other things, you know, were sidelined and whatever. And so that is, you really do get immersed in the girls' worlds and their mother's world. And I would recommend reading it. But now I would like to talk to you, Herta, about some other things in your life.
Sure.
Because I think we have already heard that you are a very protective person yourself, that you would like to and a nurturing person, and a saving person.
Mm.
And I want to talk about Safe Kids Worldwide, which you co-founded.
Okay. Safe Kids happened because I was working with a pediatric trauma surgeon at Children's Hospital in Washington, D.C. And he was focusing on developing a pediatric trauma team protocol once a child has come through the doors. And I was trying to help him figure out something about, you know, sort of in a PR sort of way, what could we do? And so I would go down every time there was a code red. I would run downstairs and see what was going on, how the trauma team would respond. However, one time they were not able to save the child's life. And by the time, and I still get a little bit, you know, weepy about this. I came down and there was a white sheet over this child. And, you know, it just really took me aback. And I had the idea at that moment. I thought, you know what? Yes, it's great to save a life once they've been injured, but let's prevent the injuries from happening in the first place. And I went to Dr. Martin Eichelberger one morning and I said, Marty, you know, if you're really serious about this childhood injury stuff, I think we should try to prevent the injuries from happening in the first place, and we should have a campaign, and it should be nationwide because every other disease has a national effort behind it, but not this, and this is the leading killer of children. And he said, he's so great. He said, okay, go do it.
Great. Go for it.
I said, really? Okay. And, you know, and so I did. I did with him.
And how, I mean, because it's... Tell me more about the organization, because you're hoping to prevent unintentional injuries.
Yes, it was entirely focused on children under the age of 14, unintentional injuries, so not abuse. So we're talking about pedestrian, passenger, drownings, burns, poisoning, you know, all of those kinds of injuries that can be prevented in one way or another. That was it. I mean, that's what we stuck with. And we did it was four-pronged. So we developed coalitions in local cities and states to actually carry out the work. We developed educational programs. We did PR and media, and we did legislation. So, you know, it was kind of multifaceted. And by doing all of those things together, you know, let's say bike helmets, for example. So you have bike helmets. Well, what kind of legislation goes along with bike helmets? Bike helmets. Because back then, when we first started it, bike helmets, they were really ugly. So we worked with the manufacturers of bike helmets and said, make them look good. Kids don't want to wear these things. They look like bubbles. So, you know, we worked with manufacturers on that aspect. We worked with local people in getting legislation passed. You know, most of the time, that's, you know, not very easy to enforce, but still, it was a step in the right direction. We did
a
huge...
It also brings up awareness generally, whether people are paying attention, people are doing it or not. At least the awareness is there. That's the start.
Yes.
Then the next generation, they're wearing it.
Yep.
And then the generation after that, you don't even think about it.
Exactly.
You know, like seatbelts, like that, that lifeline of seatbelts.
Exactly.
Not even questioned.
And smoke detectors and things like that. So I guess I didn't say the device part. You know, there's like that element. Mm-hmm. So that's how it came to be. Johnson & Johnson became our first corporate sponsor. And they launched it. I mean, they agreed to be a sponsor at $800,000 a year. And they upped it to $1 million in the second year. Dr. C. Everett Koop was the Surgeon General. Mm-hmm. He was a big fan of my boss's, and he agreed to be the honorary chairperson. So we got a lot of publicity. President Reagan had a big kickoff event for us. And then eventually it went worldwide. At the same time that we gave birth to Safe Kids, a few months later, I gave birth to my first son, and then 2 years later to my second son. And about 5 years after that, I was exhausted, and I said, I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom.
And then that changed. You said, I'm going to write.
That's right. That's right.
And enough
That's
of that,
right.
too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Radio Gorgeous, the place to find authors.
Is your sort of almost nascent...
Save the world.
Yeah, exactly. That's your mission, is to save the world. But also your having moved around as a kid. Is this sort of your you know, ability
That's
to sort of change, you know, just you don't see being static.
Definitely
part,
not.
It's not part of your makeup.
No, definitely and not.
Can I ask what the circumstances of you moving from the former Yugoslavia were? Because I'm just thinking in the current climate of immigrants and migrants and refugees.
Well, I'll tell you, I was 3 years old when we moved, and it was communist at the time. And my father's family actually had been pro-communist during World War II for Yugoslavia, and they were against Hitler. So they were German. So you were one or the other. And so he was very disappointed after the war when he realized he said something. It was very inconsequential, and he got called before the, you know, the local, I forget how it was all, you know, organized politically, but he had the party boss or whatever. He had to go explain himself, and he realized he did not have freedom of speech. And so he was the oldest of nine siblings. And his parents were still alive, and he made the decision to move to Germany. You know, that was one of the places we could easily go. You had to pay to get out. We were lucky that we were able to do that, because people in other Eastern European countries could not do that. And so we were on the train, and we actually were refugees briefly on sort of the Austrian-German border. We were in a refugee camp right around Christmas. And luckily, My mother had a brother in outside of Munich. He was able to find us a little attic apartment in this little village. And a few weeks later, we moved there. And then we lived there, excuse me, for 4 years. And then it's a really crazy story. But my grandfather, my mother's father, had moved to the U.S. in 1956. That was the year that Russia invaded Hungary. And that's very close to Austria, which is where he lived. And things were unstable. And at one point, the police came to our home and arrested my father in Germany because word had gotten back to them from other people from Yugoslavia that my father was a communist. And the whole Red Scare thing was happening too. And so he had to go down to the station. And they said, you know, my father said, let me explain. He said, you know, my family was against Hitler. And he said, if you want to arrest me for that, okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And wow. They let him go. They just let him go. But he had that experience in Germany. So there was some sense of wanting to really be free. And so...
And not have to explain yourself.
Yes. And not feel like, who's going to come after me next? So, yeah, we got on the big ship. And we came to the United States, my aunt and uncle and my cousin, who was like my brother, my mother and father, and me, without speaking a word of English.
Wow. And what was their welcome like?
We arrived on Halloween, mm-hmm. and we didn't know what that was.
What have we let ourselves in for?
We were at Grand Central Station on Halloween. Waiting for the train to St. Louis. And they were like, oh my gosh, because we didn't have Halloween. We had a form of Mardi Gras, you know, in February. But people were lovely. I didn't have quite the same experience because children, you know, they were seeing shows on TV that were anti-German. And so one day they called me a Nazi. So I got some bullying and some ostracism that was very painful. And I think that I tapped into that a bit for Phoebe.
This is a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2016. For more information, go to radiogorgeous.com.